The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome to Afternoons with Mike. It is my joy once again to be with you. Today I have in studio a guest. I've just met this young man, and he is a lot younger than I expected, being the role that he plays and the length of time that he's been at First Baptist in Oxford, and he is also on the radio with us, Pastor Andrew Krupp.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, that's great to have you here today. And, you know, you've been on our station now for about, what, 5 years or so?
I think we've been with The Shepherd for 2 or 3 years.
Okay, mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah.
You've been in the area for at least that long.
Correct, yes. Yeah, been in the area for 5 years.
That's where I'm getting that. And, you know, this is really fun to have people that are already on our station in their long-form programs. And First Baptist has had this program with us again that long, and you're on every Sunday morning, and it's really, yeah. I know it's got to be weird for you to be out of the pulpit, and now you've got you talk on microphones all the time, but not in this kind of a setting.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. This is very different. So,
tell us about yourself. Where did you grow up? How did you come to know the Lord?
Yeah, so I grew up in a really small town in Maryland called Monrovia, Maryland. And when I say it's small, it's that type of town that if you just drove a few miles outside the town and said Monrovia, nobody knew where you were talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
So I grew up in a really small town. My wife actually grew up in a small town just a few miles from Monrovia. So both of us from small towns in Maryland. And I came to know the Lord through my parents. So my parents are two of the most God-fearing people that I know.
Hmm.
And we were that family that we were in church every time the doors were open. Because my parents were leaders in different roles in that church, we were also the ones closing down the church plenty of Sundays. But it wasn't just being in church that made an impact on me as a kid. It was seeing how much my parents loved the Lord outside of church. I can still remember as a kid, if I woke up early in the morning, I would find my parents in the same place. And it's the same place they'd be this morning and tomorrow. It's that they were sitting together in their study, reading the Bible, and they just had this impact on all of us as kids because they modeled what it looked like to love Jesus more than anything or anyone else. And so through being in church, through seeing that in my parents, and then through their actual pouring into me, my siblings, teaching us the Bible, I came to understand at a really young age that I was a sinner, that I had broken God's commands. Even as a little kid, I was mean to my siblings. I would disobey my parents. And I realized that because of that, I needed to be saved. And they taught me the truth that Jesus came and died on the cross for my sins. He didn't stay in the grave, but that he rose from the dead. And if I put my faith in him, gave him my life, he would forgive me and he would save me. And so when I was 5 years old, I was with my mom and I prayed to receive Jesus Christ as my Savior.
At five years old. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And it was the real deal.
He's been with me ever since. And I'll say that I struggled with something. Maybe some of your listeners have too, if they accepted Jesus when they were young. I struggled for a long time with the idea that, you know, because I didn't have a dramatic conversion story,
yeah,
that it didn't matter or mean as much is probably a better way to put it, that it couldn't impact people. And I've met other Christians who have similar stories. You know, I got saved when I was young. And don't get me wrong, I think the people that were in the depths of brokenness and sin and despair, and Jesus rescued them. Those are powerful stories. I love that. I think something important for us to remember as Christians, if we got saved when we were young, is to realize that Jesus saved us from that lifestyle too. If we were following him, he rescued us so that we don't have that part of our story. So I love hearing those stories when people got saved when they were young, and people who didn't get saved when they were young, they got saved out of something really, some really difficult situation. But for me personally, my story was I got saved when I was young, and he's been with me ever since.
I think what you could say is you were saved from it where other people are saved out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think that's a wonderful way to look at that, and it's real. And besides that, the fact is that we are all sinners, and we all had the same need, whether we had done those things, whether our testimony and our lifestyle and all of the bad habits, murderers, we all need Jesus equally.
Yep.
And if we don't have him, we're all going to the same place equally. And that there's that has got to be understood. Mm. And I'm grateful that you came to that. You know, I hear stories ever so often about a set of parents like what your mom and dad were for you and your siblings. I can't tell you how encouraging it is to hear that, that they modeled not only taking you on a Sunday, but more importantly, Monday through Friday, Monday through Saturday, they're modeling walking, modeling reading the word, having a devoted life. That doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't. And I think it's a great reminder for parents that your kids are watching you. They're not just listening to you, but they're watching you, the things that you do, and it really sticks with them. And some of those things I didn't think about how important they were as a kid, I see it now. Mm-hmm. And because of that, my parents continue to play a big influence in my life. I even called them the other day. I was getting ready to teach through a Bible passage with some of the youth at our church. And I was just talking to my parents about it because I wanted to get some of their feedback on things. So I still talk to them about the Bible, and they still teach me more than I think any pastor or Bible teacher ever has. So,
what did your dad do for a living?
So my dad, that's always been a fun one to try and explain to people. My dad by trade is an accountant. So he's a CPA, but he's also done a lot of different things in real estate, different businesses that he's owned and operated. But in a church role, in a ministry role, he was a lay elder in the church that I grew up in. But yeah, as far as work goes, he's done a lot of different things and still continues to do a lot of different things.
What I think is so exciting about that, Pastor, is the fact that he was not a full-time guy. He was not involved as a church pastor and working. And I think so many people have this notion that to be involved and to be effective in ministry, they have to be a paid pastor. And that could not be farther from the truth or further from the truth in this sense, because of the fact that your dad was in business and yet his life, his love, his passions, everything about what they did Monday through Sunday was Jesus. And it's one thing to have that. It's another thing to so effectively pass that down to where kids see it and they get it and they love it and they want to be there. And at 5 years old, you're finding the Lord and it sticks. That's just amazing to me.
Yeah. So they are two people I'm very thankful for, because just like you said, it was a great example, continues to be a great example for us. And I love how you put it. There is the idea we have in Christendom that, you know, it's the full time, the people who are paid to do ministry that should do the ministry and be involved. They're the ones who should teach the kids and teach everyone. And we lose sight of the fact that all believers have this responsibility to serve the Lord, live for the Lord, and all parents, especially Christian parents, we need to be raising our kids to know what it means to follow Jesus. And so I really pray that more and more Christian parents grasp that and see that and take hold of that, whether or not they're in ministry full-time or not. So that's a great point.
And it's not too late. If you are hearing this right now and you are convicted in a good way, you know, I'm really mean, not without guilt, but inspired to hear what Pastor Andrew Kropp is saying right now, is that your children, when they wake up in the morning, if they find their mom and dad at a table with a Bible open and reading, or find them praying, it does make an impact. And it burns something. I like the word inculcate, because it chisels that image in their mind, and they grow up differently with an attitude about God. Then I think if more parents right now were doing that in America today, how different our nation would be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I hope all parents that are listening would be encouraged by that. I like how you put it. It's not too late.
Not too late.
Yeah. It's not too late to be parents that don't just take your kids to church on Sundays, which is a great thing. And I hope that all Christian parents are doing that, but to demonstrate it every single day. And I think the parents who maybe haven't been doing that, and then they make that change, that's going to impact their kids too. When they see that intentional change that they make, they're going to remember that. And I think that's an awesome truth, a great point. Like,
because they can see the difference in what it was like before and what it's like now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that reality, that's why I always encourage, it's not too late to make a life change with Jesus. And that, I love that phrase that says he's the God of second chances. Mm-hmm. He gives us those opportunities. And boy, I tell you what a refreshing story that is. Glad your parents are still in good health? And yes. are they in the same little small town?
Still, and they've moved to a different small town, but they're still okay. in Maryland and still serving in church. And now they're passing on those godly examples to their grandkids up north. So,
oh, that's wonderful. Well, God bless them and thank God for them. Where did you get your training in ministry?
So I was, as far as formal education after high school, I went and for a brief time, I was at Cornerstone University in Michigan. So I spent my freshman year there, but I finished my bachelor's degree at Crown College in Minnesota. It's formerly St. Paul Bible mm-hmm. College. So I went there for my undergraduate degree. I got a bachelor's in New Testament studies. Mm. And then after that, I went to Liberty University for seminary.
Wonderful.
Yeah, and just enjoyed every moment of it.
Well, that's great. Yeah. And from there, what was your call into ministry like?
So my call into ministry, again, goes back to my parents, because the first person ever put that in my mind, I think I was in seventh or eighth grade, and I've always been a planner. So as a seventh and eighth grader, I was telling my dad how frustrated I was that I didn't know what to do with my life as a seventh or eighth grader. Mm. He was the first person to ever say, "Have you ever considered ministry?" And I remember thinking to myself, you know, pastors are perfect people. So there's no way that that's what God is calling me mm. to. And even though I've heard pastors say, you know, we're not perfect, I really held on to that. And then when I entered into high school, I was blessed to go to a Christian high school. When I was in high school, I had different opportunities. For example, we had chapel in high school. So I was given the opportunity several times to lead chapel and to just share with my fellow students whatever I'd been learning in the Bible. It was things like that where I found that I really loved being able to not just read scripture, but as I understood it, share what I was understanding and learning with others. And it was through things like this that God began to confirm that call that he wanted me in ministry. And that was actually when I finally realized pastors aren't perfect people, was when I realized he was calling me into ministry. Mm-hmm. So clearly that means pastors aren't perfect if he wants me to do that.
And if it was a perfect club before, it's not perfect anymore.
That's right.
So I'm in it.
So I ruined it for everybody else. But
I don't think
But I continued, and there was always that doubt though. There was always the doubt, is this really what God could want from me? Because I struggled like a lot of people with the idea that, you know, recognizing my own brokenness. So I mentioned earlier, I was blessed to get saved at a young age, and that I know that means Christ rescued me from a lot of things I could have fallen into. But I still knew that growing up, I had a lot of imperfections. There were a lot of things that I felt made it that I was unworthy to be in ministry. But this is what God just kept putting on my plate. So as I moved forward, I said, okay, well, I'm going to go to college and I'll study the Bible. And I'm just going to trust God to keep confirming that for me. And as he gave me opportunities to serve and volunteer in churches, I said, okay, I'm going to go to seminary, and I hope this is what he wants from me. And then it just led all the way to First Baptist Church of Oxford. So he just has continually affirmed that this is where he wants me to be. And so it's a blessing to know that God can use broken and imperfect people mm-hmm. for his kingdom purposes. And I really, really praise him for that.
You know, when you think about what sanctification is all about, mm-hmm. it is just that. It's mm-hmm. the daily work in our lives,
yeah.
making us to be more like the Lord. Mm. And just even saying it that way, we all hear that. We've heard that. Those of us that are believers, we are familiar with that concept. But the truth of it is that concept would mean nothing were it not for the fact that we are in deep need of change, mm-hmm. in deep need of becoming more like the Lord. And that implies what it is true, that we were far from, and the Bible says, you know, we are nothing like God.
Right.
As high as the heavens are above the earth, so far are his ways above ours. And, oh my goodness, just to become more like the Lord is saying more than we can ever think or imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's crazy. Boy, Andrew, it is great to hear such a story. And I trust, again, friends, if you're hearing this and you are a mom or a dad and you know that already God is leading you, God is instructing you to do some things with your kids maybe differently than what you've been doing, I want to encourage you to be mindful today that it's probably not just my words or Andrew's words that are affecting you. It could well be that the Lord himself is doing the same thing that happened in Andrew's life when he kept throwing this out. God, if this is for what you're wanting me to do, then please confirm it. And you did over and over. And He may well be doing that in your life right now, confirming to you some things that he wants you to do differently. And one day, here's the hope, one day your kids are going to come back to you and remind you of what an impact that had on them. I know what a blessing that must be, sir, for you to talk to your mom and dad and for them to see what's happened in your life. That's got to be a thrill for them.
I sure hope that it is for them. they may not enjoy when I use them as sermon illustrations, but other than that, I think that they're, I know that it is, it must be a joy for them to know that we noticed, and I hope it's a joy for them. And so I try and remind them often the encouragement that they are to me. And I trust that that's true for a lot of kids out there, to the parents who are listening, that these parents are encouraging their kids too. So
now, was this your first role in ministry at First Baptist, or first as a senior pastor?
Yes. So First Baptist Church of Oxford is actually the first church where I was on staff. But being the senior pastor was not my first role there.
Okay.
So I was actually hired to be the pastor to youth and young families in 2015. That's what I came to do. I was working under the senior pastor at the time, Don Manley, and he retired at the end of 2016. In 2017, Dr. Charles Roselle, he was the former senior pastor at First Baptist Leesburg, he came and interimed for a year. He was mentoring me for quite a while before that. And then in 2018, I stepped into this role of senior pastor at the church. It's just been a real blessing and privilege to serve the people there.
Do you enjoy being a senior pastor?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I love everything about it. Wouldn't trade what the Lord has me doing for anything else.
Oh, my goodness. This is fun, folks, and I know you're having a good time, too. I am talking today to Andrew Krupp. He is the senior pastor of First Baptist, and that is located in Oxford. We're going to talk about that area. Oxford is right in the area of a big space in Florida, known around the world, really, called the Villages. And we're going to hear more from Pastor Andrew Krupp in a moment. This is The Shepherd, and you're listening to Afternoons with Mike. So honored today to have Pastor Andrew Krupp, and he is the senior pastor at the church in Oxford, First Baptist Church. And we've learned from his background that he came there as a pastor on staff, was there for maybe, 2 years or so in that role. And then when his pastor retired and another pastor kind of filled in the interim, Andrew was named in 2018?
Correct, yeah.
2018 as the senior pastor in Oxford. And, you know, a lot of people may not know exactly where Oxford in itself is not a huge city by any stroke of the imagination.
No, it is not. So I mentioned earlier I came from a small town in Maryland, and I moved to a small town in Florida because, again, Oxford is much the same way. Not a lot of people know where Oxford is. It's getting swallowed up a little bit by the areas around it, like Wildwood, which is to the south, then Summerfield to the north, and then the Villages, which is just all around us. So
yeah, now the Villages is more than just an incorporated community. Mm-hmm. It's like it's almost like its own movement.
And it really is.
And we mentioned, now, when you came to Oxford, was ministry in the Villages something that was talked about or maybe even made part of the, I guess you could say, the potential for the church?
Yeah, so it's something that the church has always recognized, which is Oxford used to be a farming community. It wasn't as big as it is now that the Villages has moved in. And I'm very thankful that the church recognized what a lot of churches in the areas do, which is with the Villages moving in, that means more people to minister to. Mm-hmm. It means that there are a lot more people. The thing some people miss out on is they think if the Villages grows, that just means there are retirees around, but that also means an influx of young families to work the area, to work the hospitals and the businesses. So really, as the Villages grows, the whole area around it is growing, and the church has had a vision for, you know, we need to reach all these people that are just coming to our doorstep, and what are practical ways that we can do that. Those were some of the early things the senior pastor who brought me on staff talked with me about too. You know, what are ways that we can reach the families moving in? What are ways we can reach the Villagers who are, again, just in this, I like how you put it, a movement of sorts. The Villages is kind of its own thing, and how it was just growing. How can we reach them was always something the church has been trying to pursue and consider.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know there's a constant talk about this area. There is a Saturday program in radio, a rock and roll kind of golden oldies program that for years was originated right from the villages. I don't know if it still is that way or not, but this is kind of talked about basically all across America as one of the premier areas where people come, and not just to retire, but especially those that in their 50s who have maybe sold businesses and they want the golf lifestyle, they want the golf cart lifestyle, because that's something that I don't know if anybody comes to your church in golf carts. I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
From time to time, people have found a way. Our church is considered not golf cart accessible, so okay. We don't have a tunnel or a bridge to it. But I have been surprised to see some people found a way to get one there. So
isn't that something?
I don't know how they did it, but they found a way.
Well, what is it like right now? Tell us a little bit. This is such a beautiful area. Mm. And you're right when you say it's small, but it's mixed in with people or communities that people drive by. And most people who pass by the turnpike would see Wildwood. If they mm-hmm. wouldn't see a sign for Oxford, mm-hmm. they would see Summerfield or Wildwood.
Yep, absolutely.
And you're right there. So what is it? What was it like when you first moved down? I can't imagine the changes it was for you, but you had to be thinking, okay, this is a lot different than living in Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very different than Maryland. And from Maryland, we lived for a brief stint, my wife and I, in Virginia. After we got married, we were there, but very similar to Maryland. And then we came down here, and the senior pastor told me, you know, this is what the Villages is. I don't know if it's going to be some culture shock for you. And I told him, I think I'll be fine. And then when I came down to interview, my wife and I were really confused. We saw all these golf carts in the parking lot at Target, and there were spaces just for golf carts. It was very confusing to us.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a very different type of area to live in. Yeah, there was a little bit of that to adjust to. Mm-hmm. Just realizing that the Villages has some of its own things, like, again, golf carts being all over the place. They're on the roads. They're in different places. You got to watch out for them. But being able to see so many different things, it's been really, really interesting to find ways to reach people who are in that community, because it's a different life that they're engaged in now. Because like you said just a few minutes ago, there are people there who have sold businesses. Mm-hmm. They've sold different things. They've done well in their lives. They're in that retirement age, and they go to the Villages. And I have found, especially in recent years, that there are a lot of people in the Villages who they were leading people. They were at the height of their careers, and then they entered into retirement, and now they're in retirement, and they enjoy, a lot of them, the golf, the sports, all the activities. But they miss what they had before, when they were leading people, when they were influential, when they were doing all these things, and they're realizing that in retirement they don't have that. And so I found, and some of them, I'm not saying all of them feel that way. I think a lot of them enjoy the Villages, but I found that there are a lot of them who are, while they're in the Villages, looking for, what's that next thing that I can do? Where's that next kind of purpose that can drive me? Mm-hmm. And for some of them, it is sports, it's golf. And I'm very thankful that others are finding it by coming to church and looking for, how can I get plugged in and serve the body of believers? Because we know that retirement from business doesn't mean retirement from service, doesn't mm-hmm. mean retirement from the Lord. And so seeing a lot of Villagers realize that, and realize that there is still, even in retirement, much they can do for God is an exciting thing. But the Villages is certainly very different than Maryland, Virginia, anywhere else that mm-hmm. I have been. And to be honest with you, I think even 5-6 years in, I'm still trying to learn a little bit of how things go there.
You know, one of the things that I remember about Marion County in general, just that seems that there is a line there weather-wise where you guys can get hit, where Orlando wouldn't get it, and Gainesville to the north may not get it, but you guys get belted at times with some weather there.
We do, and it keeps things interesting. But thankfully, when it's hurricane time, we're at least enough inland that we don't have to worry about too much damage from things like that. But all the other inclement weather, we sure find it mm-hmm. in the Oxford area.
Now, one of the things that I think you would be a perfect person to speak on and address the subject of is community. Mm-hmm. Because what you've described a moment ago about what people need, and I think for many years, and this would go back a generation, in the 50s and 60s when there were a lot of people thinking about what retirement was going to mean for them, was maybe going on trips, traveling all the time, later on, the advent of these rolling RVs. Mm-hmm. Some people thought what would be a dream retirement would be just to sell your house and drive all of the United States in an RV. I never found that to be an attractive thought. Living out of an RV just did not, I like trips, I like camping, but to do that all the time. And I think that people who did that found that they needed this missing thing called community. Mm. It was a missing aspect in their life. And I think that is because we were all made to have life together like that. We were all made to share one with another and to have a life that is not just spent on your needs and selfishly thought of, but living in a community.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think you're right that that's what people attracts people, retirees, to the villages, is it is that. It's the community. There's so many things for them to do, sports teams that they join, and they golf, you know, with their same group, or they go to the town squares throughout the villages where there's music and dancing every night and all these things. And there is that community that they enjoy, and it's something that the church has long understood. The community is something that we're built for, and the church has realized that that the community that is built together and focused on Jesus Christ is that strong community. It's the unity that we need in the church as well. And so one of the challenges, I think, for churches located, and there are a lot of churches around the villages, is finding ways to bring people into that church community as well, and through that show them the love of Christ so that they can join the family of Christ. Because I think you make a great point. People want community. We were made for it, and we have that. And I think COVID showed us that we were made for community, because for a long time it felt like we lost that when we were isolated. We felt like we lost community. And one of the things that was my prayer during that time was that the church would long for that again. And I think it wasn't just the church, though, that longed for that. I think that there were a lot of people outside the church that realized they were missing out on community, and they really need it.
Now, you guys, obviously, you're part of a radio program that is carried on The Shepherd. So during the lockdown months, which was about, for many churches, about 2 months, is that what it was for you?
Yep, that was about what it was for us. We were only online in the month of March. And then maybe the first week in April, it was in April during that Easter time that we started doing drive-up services.
Okay.
So now not everybody came to drive-up, so we were doing a lot online. And then when May hit, Mother's Day was the first Sunday that we actually started meeting back on campus at First Baptist Church of Oxford.
Oh, I tell you what, I hope we never go through anything like that again. But yet, many churches, and it sounds like First Baptist Oxford would be one of them. They really did a couple of things that are still with them, even though they're meeting back face to face again now. And that was to embellish the ability to have these things called streaming cameras and putting the service either on Facebook or on YouTube or both, or maybe on their website. It sounds like you guys employed a greater sense of technology as well.
That's a great way to put it, because we weren't streaming before COVID. We were recording messages, and we put them on Facebook, like you said, put them different places, put the audio on our website. And before COVID even came, our worship director was looking into, hey, we need to take that next step as a church. We need to be able to stream. So what equipment do we need? What does the internet need to look like for us? So he had done all this research, and then COVID hit. And we realized more than ever how much we needed it. And because he had put in all this time and effort to it, and the church rallied behind it, we were quickly able to get what we needed. And so for a while, we were still recording messages and putting them out there as we got it together. But it meant that, especially when we started meeting back on campus, we were able to stream, because there are a lot of people who still aren't comfortable coming back or still worried about coming back. And so COVID certainly forced us to learn to do better things that we hadn't been doing before. And streaming is one of those things. I'm very thankful for it.
You know, your thoughts about people's thoughts on COVID. And I think every pastor has got to gauge their own congregation. And from what I'm hearing and where we are here at The Shepherd talking to pastors, there still is a wide range, let's say, a variety of opinions about that. But many are becoming more and more comfortable. Are you seeing the news of the vaccine? Is that a positive bent for you guys there? Would you say that it's making a positive effect on people returning?
I think so. There are some members who, now that they've gotten the vaccine, are starting to come around. They'll see us on the weekdays. They'll swing by the office, and they're starting to come back to church. And several who have told me, hey, once I get that vaccine, I'm going to return. Mm-hmm. So I know that that has, for those who have gotten it, given them a sense of security and comfort. And then I think even for those who haven't gotten it, just knowing that other people are getting vaccinated has given them a sense of comfort as well. So I think that it's been a positive thing for a mm-hmm. lot of people. I think that it's helped just the same way that I think something that scared people a few times included when there was a spike in cases. So people would stay away from church for a little while because they thought, you know, because there was a spike of positive COVID tests out there. So they would stay away a little while. And then when the test case went down, the positive cases went down, they would return. I think in light of all that, the vaccines have helped people feel like, okay, I can go back. It's a little safer to be out. So I'm glad that for that reason, it's brought comfort back to people so they could return to church.
I'm sure your folks in that area, as would be here in Orlando, are really grateful that we've had the kind of leadership with our governor being as insistent that we stay open. And it's, I compare where Florida is to other states, and there's no comparison.
Yeah, it's been a blessing to have a governor who, I can't remember how he put it in one of his press conferences. I think he said, "I never touched churches," is what he said, or something like that, how he wasn't shutting us down. And we're very thankful for that we had that freedom to continue worshiping,
right,
and finding and evaluating as staff, as leaders in churches, what are the best and safest steps for our church, for where we're at. I mean, we all have different facilities. We all have different members that we need to take into consideration. So it was a blessing to have that freedom. And something we always try and remember is what you said, which is believers in different parts of the country still can't meet, mm-hmm. or they can't meet as freely and as easily as we are. And so we really want to be praying for them. And that's something we've really tried to encourage our members to do, is as we celebrate the fact that we can gather, remember the fact that there are Christians who can't.
Which is in itself such a sad thing to think that in our country, you know, we are, after all, the United States. Mm-hmm. To find out to a great degree, we are not so united. And the leadership of a lot of states, it's really shocking. And we have a lot of programming on this show where we've talked about it openly. And we believe that this should still be something discussed. I'm grateful for people like Matt Staver at the Liberty Council that's really working with churches to protect liberties. But thank God for our governor who has made it to where churches are essential.
Mm-hmm.
And we know churches are essential.
Right.
The gospel,
right.
If there's anything that's essential in our life, it's the good news of Jesus, and we need to hear it.
Mm. And I think that for a lot of Christians, for Christians in America, we all need to be reminded that what we see, and we should be distraught over the fact that we have brothers and sisters in Christ in our country who can't meet together.
Mm-hmm.
We should also recognize that that's been the case for Christians in many parts of the world for many, many years. And so I would encourage believers who are listening to your program, not only to pray for Christians who can't meet in the United States, pray for Christians who can't meet elsewhere in the world as well, and to praise the Lord in the midst of all that, that we can meet, that we can get together, because something you and I were talking about is, you know, we miss something when we're not together in the church.
Mm-hmm.
We can't serve when we're not meeting together with the body of believers. We're not using our spiritual gifts to benefit the body. We're not able to have that fellowship to carry each other's burdens, to rejoice and mourn with one another. We miss out. And I just pray that believers don't lose sight of the fact that we have family in Christ, that they're missing out on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to be praying for them.
Well, we need to be, all of us, praying that this thing gets over and
yes.
we can become back as whatever new normal we're going to have.
Right.
I'm ready for that new normal. Does your church have people wearing masks still through the entire service, or do they take them off when they're in their seats, or what happens?
So we have some members and some attenders who will come, and they'll wear a mask for the majority of the service, for part of the time. A lot of people are not wearing masks right now, and we made the decision for ourselves as a church at the very beginning that we weren't going to enforce wearing masks. We felt, especially at the beginning, we were meeting in our gymnasium, so we had enough space for people to spread out,
mm-hmm.
for them to social distance and everything like that. So we never enforced it, which gave the people who came the freedom to decide, look, if you're comfortable wearing a mask, wear a mask the whole time. That's okay. If you don't want to wear a mask, then don't wear one. And thankfully, everybody was sensitive to how everybody else felt. So you know, if I wasn't wearing a mask and someone was, you know, just being sensitive to the fact that I'm going to give them a little bit of space. I think the church responded really well to that. So we didn't find any issues with it, mm-hmm. as we had that mix of people wearing them and not wearing them. And God really blessed us too, as we prayed for wisdom, what precautions to take, that we didn't ever have any reports of COVID spreading through any of our mm-hmm. services or activities or events that we did. But yeah, mask use continues to be just based on the individual, and some still choose to wear them.
Well, I tell you, it's exciting to hear a story about a church that not only survived COVID, but is continuing to thrive as you guys are in spite of COVID. Mm. And that's exactly what's happened. We're talking today to Andrew Kropp. He's the senior pastor at First Baptist in Oxford. And we'll be back with him for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. So much fun today talking to Pastor Andrew Kropp, and he's from First Baptist in Oxford, and he's made the drive to our Orlando studios today. Thank you for making that drive, by
Absolutely.
The way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, you get to be here and get to see the studios for yourself.
Yeah, love
in person.
Being in your studio. Oh. Yeah, love being here. It's always fun to go to Orlando, so it was a simple drive. I appreciate you letting me make the trip.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's I like doing phone interviews, but nothing like being face-to-face in our studio and get to use this wonderful equipment that God has given us, and so very thankful. You know, a young man, as I mentioned to you when I met you downstairs, when you got here this morning, I'm just shocked at how young you are, leading a church for as many years as you have, and in an area that is known for being an older, demographic than maybe other areas are. But obviously, you have a heart for that area, and your youth is going to not do anything but serve you well. That's wonderful. Oh, to be young again. How did you meet your family, your wife? How did that all happen?
So my wife and I, we grew up together, and I can't even remember the day that I met her, because we were most likely infants. Our parents went to the same church when we were young. So one of my earliest memories is that first day of kindergarten and going into the classroom, and I only knew two people. One of them was my best friend, Seth, and then the other one was Casey. And so I knew her before I even started school. So we grew up together, went to the same church, went to the same school, and then in high school we started dating. Dated long distance in college for a while, which was terrible. I was not a fan of being so far from her. But we got married shortly after we graduated. We've been married for 6 years, and it's just been been a really wonderful thing.
So, you know, a lot of people are hearing your story, and they're thinking, this is just not fair, because it's almost like the grace of God has followed you. Your parents, such a great example to you. Mm. And then when you first told me that you couldn't remember when you first met your wife, I was a little worried about you. I thought, wait a minute. Why can't you remember the girl that you married? But now I understand why. You were beyond the age of being able to remember.
Right.
You just grew up knowing her.
Yeah. Grew up together, which is really a blessing, because it means that we knew a lot of the same people growing up. So we had some mutual friends. One of the blessings is just that we got to share different experiences through things that we remember growing up together that we went through, whether it was at the church or the school. So it is a blessing. And I thank God every single day that he put Casey in my life.
Now, how old were you when you maybe had the first thought or question, could Casey be the one? How old were you?
I think I was 17. We had dated for about a year.
Before you started actually dating then.
Well, we had dated for a year. So we dated for a little while. My parents always taught us, you know, dating is for the purpose of marriage. So you need to keep that in mind. Now, they weren't saying go, you know, marry the first person you date. That's not what they're saying. But they're saying be intentional about what dating is about. Mm-hmm. Dating's for the purpose of marriage. So I started dating Casey when I was 16 years old. And it was after about a year of dating when I was 17 that I began to realize, you know, this is someone that I could see myself one day marrying, because we shared the same faith. We both love God. We share the same values. And I really loved, even at that young stage in my life, just how sweet her character was. I loved that she knew her own value. You know, she made it clear that if I wanted to date her, she said, You don't ever lie to me, you know, and you don't ever mistreat me. And I love that she knew her value in God's sight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just fell in love with her character at a really young age. And so I mentioned I was not a fan of dating long distance, which we did in college, but I was going to continue dating her because I knew she was the person that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. And wow. I praise God that I have that ability to spend the rest of my life with her.
That's a wonderful story, and grateful to God for you. And you have a child.
Yes. Yeah. I have a wonderful son. He is 1.5 years old, and he is just, he has his mother's joyful disposition. Mm-hmm. And very thankful that she's able to be home with him so that he can learn from her. And just he's brought a lot of joy to our lives. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly true.
And the hope for more children in the future, or where would that be?
If God is willing, yeah, yes. we would love to have more kids. So we're gonna leave that in his hands, see what he has for us. In the meantime, try and really get a grasp on parenting the one before any mm-hmm. more come. But
that's wonderful.
But we're enjoying it.
That's great. Well, that's so wonderfully refreshing to hear. And God bless you and Casey for doing that marvelous job of walking through those waters. You know, mm-hmm. for many people, what you guys went through, and even your description of what your 16, 17-year-old process as to look to marriage was like, mm-hmm. It's clear that the grace of God was with you, even mm-hmm. during those what are to most people troublesome times, mm-hmm. really troubling times in their lives, where, you know, finding their own way, finding the person that you really do believe yeah. God's knitted you to. That was a real gift that he gave you and Casey.
Yeah, it is a gift. And I think for me, one of the great blessings too is knowing that Casey saw those teenage years in my life when I had a quick temper, when I was just a mess. And because of that, you know, she knew me so well, and I knew her so well before marriage was a blessing. But one of the, I'm going to brag on my wife for a second mm-hmm. here, because I certainly want to do that. We know that in scripture, you know, our wives, they're our helpmate, and Casey has helped me with so many things in my life. She's been so patient with me, and just how much she has helped me with, like I said, as a teenager with that quick temper. And going through all these things, it's just a blessing that she has walked with me through so many things. Now she's walking with me through ministry, is my biggest supporter and encourager through all these things. And so it's a big blessing. Can't say that enough.
That's wonderful. Love to hear that, and thankful for examples. You know, I'm just now already thinking the cycle has come back around full cycle to where you're now doing and living in a way that's going to influence your child the same way your parents did you.
And I really hope that that's the case. So I shared earlier how I woke up and I would come in, I would see my parents doing their devotions. And one of the reasons I still think about that all the time is because I do always have this thought, what's my son going to see me doing?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, and anybody who has kids knows that even when they're little, so he's only 1.5 years old, and he'll imitate us now. You know, the things that we say or our mannerisms, he'll imitate us. And so there's this thought that comes back to my mind over and over every day, you know, what's he going to see in me, and what's he going to take away from mm-hmm. what he sees? And finally, now that I'm in that wonderful blessing of being a parent, finally being able to see what a responsibility that is, and really just praying that God would give us the wisdom to know how to guide him, because our greatest prayer for him is he would come to know the Lord at a young age, and we really want to model to him what it looks like to live for Christ. So it is it's a blessing, and it's sure a responsibility that we are really praying the Lord helps us with.
Well, friends listening, you can tell the heart of this young man who's a senior pastor. Give us your web address so people can find out how to get some information on First Baptist Oxford.
Yeah, so people can find us online at www.fbcoxfordfl.org, and that's where they can go and find out a lot about the church. So it's FBC, like First Baptist Church, Oxford, and then FL for Florida.org.
And I hope they do, and I hope they find out a little bit more about your church, come visit you face-to-face, enjoy the worship there at First Baptist. You know, one of the questions that I had for Andrew, that I love asking pastors this question, and I quickly found out that one of the things that you really enjoy that would be that thing that bubbles up in your mind when you think about what is it about preaching? What is it about leading a church that I just love the most? And for you, it was the gospel itself.
Yeah, the being able to share the gospel is a real big joy. And I always wanted to find new ways to do that. And when I came to First Baptist Church of Oxford, the senior pastor who brought me on staff, Don Manley, was the one who really fostered that in my life, especially when it came to preaching. He was the one who told me, you know, there are going to be times where maybe you're talking to a small group and you know that everyone in the room professes to be a follower of Jesus Christ, but there are going to be times where you don't know everyone in the room. This was before we were on the radio and we were streaming. So now even more so, we don't know who's joining us. Mm-hmm. And he was the one who really instilled in me, look, if you don't know their story, you need to share the gospel, because that might be the only chance they have to hear. That might be the only chance you have to share with them. And so finding ways to incorporate the gospel in not just my preaching, but in everything that we do as a church. You know, if our events aren't gospel focused, why do them? You know, and we know that the other part of the Great Commission is that we disciple believers. So another exciting thing is seeing believers grow in their knowledge of Jesus Christ, grow in their faith. So we want everything we do, from preaching to teaching to our activities, to be all about discipleship and always have that gospel element, because mm-hmm. that's the kingdom work we've been called to. And that's the way that we can impact our community best, is by sharing Jesus Christ with a lost and hurting and broken world.
Now, clearly, you're doing a good job at this, but a lot of churches would maybe feel that they have not been quite as successful in getting the members, much less the staff, getting even the staff to share that vision about how important that is. Is this something that you find yourself asking of God regularly? To Lord, bring along everybody at First Baptist in this heart with a love for the gospel?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it is for like you said, there are going to be believers in other churches who might think to themselves, you know, how can we get to that place? And I certainly don't want to say that we are the perfect church, and I love First Baptist Church of Oxford, but it's something we're still growing in, which is how can all of us have that responsibility? Because something we want people to remember is sharing the gospel. You know, it's very easy for Christians to think sharing the gospel is just for the pastors. I shared with our church one time that the funny thing is a lot of pastors think that sharing the gospel is on the responsibility of the members. So we keep pointing the finger, waiting for the other person to do it. But the truth mm-hmm. is we're all supposed to be doing that. So back when I was first brought on staff, our senior pastor really wanted to make clear what our mission was for the church. So like a lot of churches, we have a mission statement, which really just means everything we do needs to come back to this purpose. And ours is the Great Commission, that we would disciple believers and that we would share the gospel with the world. And so one of the ways we've tried to instill that in the church is, and we've really been trying to do this the last couple of years, is we've told the church, if our goal is going to be to share the gospel, which needs to be our goal, then as a leadership team, we are going to try and give you the training you need. Just how, you know, how do you share your faith? How do you share your testimony? We're going to train you. We're going to give you opportunities. So we're going to put on events and we're going to do things where mm-hmm. you just need to come. And we trust the community will come and you can share with them. And then we just need to go and do it. And we think that this is the first step for some believers to then just going out. Because we also want believers to do it in their own communities, to do it because we, so many of us have lost family and friends and neighbors and acquaintances, coworkers. It's certainly something that we continue to work on at First Baptist Church mm-hmm. of Oxford, because it's a continual work. And so I'm very, very grateful that the members are starting to really grasp that, get on board with it. They're sharing the gospel, and it's an awesome joy to see that.
It really is mm-hmm. exciting to see people in general, but I can only imagine as a senior pastor of this church, when you realize that those that you work along with, the leaders in the church, as well as the members, start enjoying that aspect of teaching and, you know, evangelizing and seeing the gospel, even just being the topic that they talk about in their families. That's a really exciting thing for a leader like yourself to see it kind of catch and get into the heart of where people are. So congratulations on that. You know, I'm just grateful as I look at the future for your church here in this what we hope to be soon be able to be said post-COVID time. We're thankful that churches are coming back. Our church members are coming back to their services. You have your church service is obviously there in Oxford. Give us the times where they can come face to face and be with you.
So our in-person services are on Sunday mornings at 8:15 is our first service. And then we have Sunday school at 9:30. So we have Sunday school for adults, Sunday school for kids and youth. We do also have a Sunday school for deaf individuals. That starts a little earlier at 9 o'clock. And then at 10:30 is our second service. And that's our service that's interpreted for the deaf as well. But 10:30 is our second service on Sunday. And then we do have Wednesday night programs at 6 o'clock.
Give us your address.
So our address is 4060 County Road 108, and that's in Oxford, Florida. So 4060 County Road 108, right off 301. If people find themselves driving 301 and they're heading towards the kind of the Bellevue, Ocala area, before you get there, you're going to be passing by First Baptist Church of Oxford.
Oh, it's a great location.
Yes, absolutely.
Well-traveled and a good route right there. And you're on the radio at 10 a.m. on The Shepherd. And for those that are in that area, you can listen on FM at 103.5 or on WRZN in Ocala at 720 a.m. And listen to this young man preach. And he has a heart for God. And I hope that all of you that are listening, that are looking for a church home, you'll consider going by and visiting this family, First Baptist Church in Oxford, Florida. Pastor Andrew Kropp, thank you for being with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Mike. It was a real, real privilege and a real joy. Thank you.
It's so much fun to get to see a young man on fire for God, and we'll have to have you back.
God I would love that.
God bless you. And friends, thanks for being with me today on Afternoons with Mike. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.